Transmitting to you from Old Heart Radio.
Prepare to have your bones chilled and your hairs raised. It's the Whack Arnold's Brothers Podcast.
Welcome home.
And here we are. Welcome to episode 86. I nailed it this time.
Yes.
So, my goodness. What's been on your radar lately? What have you watched any besides the movie we're going to talk about today? Have you watched any like cool horror movies lately?
So I started watching this movie on Screambox called Silent Madness. It's actually, it was shot in 3D, so, but it's about, long story short, it's about this lady that's working at a mental institution, and she finds out that, through a clerical error, they accidentally released, the wrong patient. The patient they released is like a psychotic serial killer.
Like
20 minutes into that last night, and it's a great setup. So one death scene so far, so I'm looking forward to watching more of that. Other than that, this last week I've really spent a lot of my time just doing homework and playing Tears of the Kingdom.
So what's your take on Tears of the Kingdom so far?
I mean, it's fun, you know, like I'm a lifelong Zelda fan. It's a lot of fun, I'm not gonna lie. You know, I've already put a bunch of hours into it. I'm pretty far already. My only gripe is that it's very similar, and I think that, you know, we knew that going in, but it's very similar to Breath of the Wild. You know, there are some quality of life changes. There's some new mechanics that make it interesting, but it's like, the shrines are the same, like, you know, you're going to do shrines to get either heart upgrades or stamina upgrades. And then instead of the four divine beasts, it's the four regional phenomena. So there's like a couple things that are somewhat similar, but it's a blast. And I just got to, I'm about to wrap up the fourth regional phenomena. I'm at the boss encounter. So yeah, it's been fun.
Shit. Oh damn, dude. Yeah,
it's about you.
Me? Honestly, like, I've been kind of in this weird, I haven't really watched any like good horror movies this week necessarily. I've been in this really I've been in a Jackie Chan hole, so
okay. Yeah.
I've been watching a lot of Jackie Chan movies lately. Like, there's just so many good ones. Like, I don't know.
Jackie Chan? That motherfucker don't even speak English. But continue, sorry.
Like, I don't know how it went by me, but like, I just watched his movie Police Story last night, actually. And it's like, it's a fucking wild movie. So, you know, he plays this like officer who is like, you know, he's part of, you know, a squad that's trying to take down this big gangster, keeps getting foiled, and then they start fucking with him, and he has to, you know, like, he kind of goes rogue, you know, to take down the guy or whatever. But it's just this like crazy movie with all these like wild stunts, and like within the first like 10 minutes of the movie, there's like this police shootout that's happening in this kind of like you can tell it's sort of like a poor area of whatever city, and like to escape the police sting, these gangsters, like they end up like driving these cars straight through this village down this hill, and there's like three vehicles just tearing through, and they have these like huge like wide shots of it, and it's like Like, it's all real. Like, people are, like, behind those wheels, like, driving through these buildings down this hillside. And, like, you know, I was just like, holy shit. Like, the stunt work involved, one, as well as, like, could you imagine, like, erecting that set?
No.
All for like the pure destruction of it. Like, and the fact that it was like, you either get this shot or you fucking don't, because like, right. That's thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of fucking shit, you know? And oh my God, I was just blown away by it. And of course, Jackie Chan is just like, he always has this like, you know, sense of like, it's like comedy, but also like his action sequences and his
he's phenomenal.
Choreography is fuck yeah, phenomenal is the word, man. It's like, it's so fucking impressive. Like, there's this whole sequence where he's dangling off the side of this like double decker bus while holding onto an umbrella, and like, yeah, and it's like, you know, you're just like, dude, like, I don't know. Anyway, so I've been right up in a Jackie Chan hole, and
he's got a lot of really good movies, but then he has a lot of really weird ones. Like, oh, yeah. I don't know the name of it, but it's the one where like, it's like the magical trousers or the magical suit or whatever.
I didn't know Jackie Chan was in a Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants movie.
Yeah, it's like the magical suit or whatever. And he's like, you know, but yeah, how the fuck did you get into a Jackie Chan hole?
Well, like, I'll tell you exactly how. So, you know, my all-time favorite Jackie Chan movie is Rumble in the Bronx.
Okay.
It's just, you know, this outlandish fucking New York City movie, you know, where he, and so... I was trying to work on editing podcasts and stuff this one day, and I was like, I need to put something on that like equally I'm familiar with, but I can also, you know, have that moment of like break and like, you know, enjoy the fucking movie. And I saw that it was streaming, and I was just like, oh my God, Rumble in the Bronx it is, because I've watched that movie a fucking dozen times, and I'll watch it a dozen more. And ever since that, I've been like cruising around stream, like the different streamers, and I'll just like find a Jackie Chan movie, and I'm like, oh, that sounds intriguing.
That's cool.
Yeah, dude, I love it. But this is not a Jackie Chan themed podcast.
No.
First of all, though, have to give a quick shout out to Perkins.
Yeah.
Perkins. Yeah. Is, you know, we were joking about it before recording, having a date recently. The one regret that I really have about the occasion was that we did not go to Perkins. Unfortunately, there is no Perkins near us.
Yeah.
And so immediately that cast a little bit of a shadow on the date, I'd say. If we would have gotten some cheap but delicious grub in a family-friendly bakery style restaurant, who knows where the night would have gone. But
yeah,
you know,
yeah, really,
yeah. I mean, that just, to me, that's just like, it shows the magic of Perkins. Like, Perkins can bring people together, you know.
Yes.
And when you're not at Perkins, you just don't have that same Perkins feeling.
Yeah, just like you said, it's that connection, you know. If I'm at, like I said before we started recording, you get me to a Perkins, and I'm liable to do anything. So,
oh, yeah,
we could have went to the Strawberry Freshtable, you know. So
I know, you know. I wanted somebody to whisk me away to that Strawberry Freshtable.
Next year.
There's always next year.
There's always next year.
You know, really quick, fun tidbit I found about Perkins.
Okay.
This is part of Perkins history and lore. Was apparently, you know, we've talked a little bit about their changing identity and, you know, how they, you know, I think it was in the 80s or the 90s, they were acquired by the Maria Callender Company. Apparently in the 70s, before all of that, they were acquired by the Holiday Corp, which is the owners of Holiday Inn.
Okay.
which I never knew that those two were affiliated, but and at the time it was Perkins Cake and Steak. So
that's right. Yeah.
Perhaps my favorite version of the name.
Yeah, Perkins Cake and Steak. It rolls off the tongue, you know. It's clever.
But I never knew that the Holiday Inn Company owned Perkins. I thought that was a wild bit of information.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if at that time, if maybe you were staying at a Holidays Inn restaurant, you got like a coupon or a voucher for a Perkins meal. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, Perkins perk. Yeah, that'd be fantastic. Yeah, like instead of a mint on your pillow, it's a Perkins coupon.
Yeah, yeah. Free appetizer.
Free short stack at Perkins Cake and Steak.
Yeah.
Damn, dude.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was a real thing. It was like, you know, stay at a Holiday Inn and get a free meal at Perkins or something. Dude, I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't either.
But good to know.
That'd be incredible. Perkins has gotten around in terms of business. Perkins
really
has,
though.
Yeah, it seems like they've been shuffled about. But Perkins plugs aside, what movie are we talking about here for episode 86?
So we are watching and reviewing The Final Terror, which is a 1983 horror movie. And its working title was Bump in the Night. It also had a couple different, like there's a point where they were having a hard time coming up with a title. So I remember seeing a couple different names of what it could have been called, but anyway, it wound up being called The Final Terror. It's a 1983 horror movie. One of the interesting things about it is that they filmed it in 81 and it was finished in 81, but it was shelved for 2 years because they were unable to find a distributor. And then in 83, they released it because of some of the people in the movie gaining some traction in their career, Daryl Hannah and Adrian Zemed. So they were like, then it finally got released in 83. So,
yeah, that's interesting because that would have meant,
it's sort of similar to the Cabin in the Woods type deal where that was filmed and it didn't come out for like another 2 years. And at that time, Chris Hemsworth had blown up. So,
I didn't realize that about Cabin in the Woods. That makes sense, you know, when you say it, but I guess I never realized that. Daryl Hannah would have been because it was Blade Runner that really broke Daryl Hannah's career, I think. And that's kind of funny. Who's the other guy? Like, what was he known for?
TJ Hooker. He was in Grease too. He's in a bunch of different shit, apparently. The actress that plays Vanessa, she was in The Color Purple. And then obviously the most recognizable, aside from Daryl Hannah, is Joe Pantoliano, who has been in all kinds of shit. Goonies, Bad Boys. He's most probably well known for The Sopranos, but he is very young in this movie. Almost unrecognizable.
That's right. The random thing I read about him when I was like cruising the wiki, it was that he got hired for the role of Edgar, basically because he showed up to the audition in character.
Yeah.
I thought that was such a funny fact. He just was so into it that he just.
It'd have been a fun role to play.
Oh yeah.
The director too has a really random filmography. The guy's name is Andrew Davis. I believe this was his second or third movie. He went on to do a bunch of different action thrillers like Under Siege, The Fugitive, but he also directed a early 2000s family classic, Holes.
What?
Yeah, super random.
That is so random.
Holes is a classic, though. Like,
oh yeah, I mean, it was it was one of those, like, it was such a good adaptation of that book.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
it just brought it to life so well. And yeah, there's something about Sigourney Weaver in that movie that does something for me. If I'm being if I'm being honest, Holes, man.
Holes, yeah,
yeah, a great Shia LaBeouf movie.
Yeah, years before he sort of, you know, apparently went off his rocker, and you know, but yeah, man, he's another one of those, like, there's so many instances of these child actors that do all this good shit, and then, you know, when they get older, I don't know if they have, like,
I mean, a
trauma
lot of
they're working through or whatever it is, but just go off the rails.
Yeah, I feel like, really. I agree. It's always, it seems like it's always like some sort of, like, you know, like trauma that has caught up with them, that there's like started, like, you know, and it's, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it sucks to think that, like, you know, the kids like went through that during those times where you're like, you were like so entertained by them.
Yeah,
in a way.
I think one of the ones that always sticks out to me is Corey Feldman, where he's just like super bizarre. He tried to do this like rap career and this like music career that was atrocious.
It's still going on, man.
Yeah, I'm the comeback king. I'm the.
Oh my god, dude! It's
that
so wild.
Music video is, oh my god,
it's insanity that he's doing
the comeback king.
But yeah, that's. I mean, Corey Feldman's definitely like a weird case. Well, and he's been like, he's one of those, like, he's been very outspoken about some of the abuse and shit that he witnessed and went through. And
absolutely.
But all the same, though, it's like, so, like, I mean, he's probably just got money to spend or something, but it's like, how is anybody like giving, like, listening to his music or like seeing him do these like performances and being like, Corey, you're on the right track, man. You're doing great.
This that's shit's a good banging. Point, though.
Like, there's that's nobody in his circle that's like, yo, this,
you
like, the world's
the
laughing
out.
At you, man.
Yeah.
Like,
that's a good point.
Ay. But
yeah.
Okay. So, the Final Terror, it would, like you said, it was shelved for 2 years, which is kind of wild. It also, I remember reading that the opening sequence was shot like after the fact.
Yeah.
Like they went back
production
because they like wanted to add a little something extra or something, or basically. And so it like does feel really detached from the rest of the movie in a lot of ways, but
right.
Yeah. But I mean, like, it does. I can't even remember the name of the character. One of them's Jimmy.
Jim and Lori.
So like it kind of opens with this sequence of Jim and Lori like cruising through the woods and then like getting knocked over on this motorcycle, which leads to.
I don't know if you caught this, but in the scene where they're crashing, it like cuts to probably like the stunt people. But whoever the girl is that was doing the stunt, she had like dark hair. So it's, I don't know if you noticed that, but it's real quick where you see them coming down and it's, you know, this light haired Lori, and then they go to crash and it's dark hair. And then after the crash, it's back to the light.
Oh God, dude.
But yeah.
Yeah. That's ridiculous. Yeah. So they, you know, it's like them, they crash on this bike, Jim's legs pinned and he's hurt. Lori's all right. So, you know, she basically like runs off to try and go get help and leaves Jim
sitting by a rock.
Yeah. Unfortunately, where she runs, there is nobody there. And so she basically turns back around and goes back to Jim. But the real question is, where the fuck did Jim go? Because he ain't there no more. And so, like, you know, of course, it leads to Lori looking around and stuff. But what happens to Jim?
So, you know, she comes back to where he was located at. She can't, you know, she's calling out for him. She can't find him. She ends up, you know, taking a couple steps forward, and Jim's dead body just comes plummeting down, like hanging from a tree. Dang. You're like, oh fuck. But what happens to her is even better. Yeah. This is what I'm saying, where aside from the ending scene, like, I wish there would have been more of these traps, because she's, you know, she's obviously in fright. She's trying to run away from the situation. And you get this shot of her feet, and she trips over like a rope or a string, setting off a trap in these fucking tree branches with a bunch of different, like, razor sharp tops from cans. You know, like back in the day, you had to use a can opener and open a can, and the fucking top would be sharp as shit. It's a bunch of those all over the tree branches, and they just come swinging in and fucking get her and kill her. It was pretty solid.
Yeah, dude, it was. I was like I thought that was gonna set the tone for the whole movie, and I was so looking forward to it. After that, I was like, oh shit, because that, like, I mean, the trap itself is one thing, but for some reason, the creativity of the can lids really like made me love it. You know?
Yeah.
It was like that extra weird little detail. But yeah, so absolutely. So they both just get kind of iced right then and there, and like then it kind of drifts through the credits, and you have
it's such a weird like nightmare scene, and it's just it's so weird.
Yeah, it's I don't understand it. It's like so what's his face?
There's like a bunch of people on a bus sleeping. It's dark outside. Everyone's asleep except for one person who's reading a porno magazine.
Yeah.
He gets like accosted by somebody. He spits in the person's face. Then he gets woken up and you're like, what?
Yeah. That's what I mean. It was just like, what the fuck just happened?
But then you get introduced to Edgar.
Yeah. Edgar's he's, you know, the I'd say the standout character for sure in the movie. But he's like going around waking up all the other, like, all these other park rangers. He's not actually technically a park ranger himself. He's like a the mechanic handyman or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But he's like going around waking up all the rangers, and like you just immediately get the vibe that like none of them like him, you know. One, like, they kept saying things like Edgar, what are you up to? Like, what was it? You up to your old tricks again?
Yeah, because he's just kind of a dick, you know. Yeah. He's like, he's one of those people that's doing something douchey and gets enjoyment out of it, you know.
Yeah, he's kind of sneering, like,
yeah, like what was the need for him to go in there and just like very rudely wake all these people up, you know?
What's the one guy, the Sarge or whatever they kept calling him, like
Zorch. Dennis. That's Dennis.
Zorch. I thought they kept saying Sarge later in the movie. Zorch. So like when he wakes him up, the dude like has the best reaction though, because he's like he calls Edgar a goddamn geek and then pulls a knife on him.
That's right. Yeah.
But yeah, dude, like, you know, it is. It's just like, I don't know. Edgar, like, immediately, you're just like, fucking weirdo, dude. But yeah, from there, it kind of goes to this, like, it's like a scene in the kitchen with
we get the feeling that Mike is like the guy in charge of all of the males. And then when we get introduced to the women, it seems like Melanie is the one that's in charge of the females. So, and I know that here shortly when they get into the bus, there's like stuff on the bus. On one side, it says Redwood County Youth Corps. And on the other side of the bus, it mentions something about the Wild River Fire Base. So I'm not sure if it's like, these are teenagers that are helping as park rangers or what. It's never really established.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, in this, like, sequence where they're, you know, Mike sits down with the rest of the rangers, they make it sound like they're picking up these three girls and his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And it, and in a like in like one of the next scenes, like Edgar even kind of throws it in his face. He's like, "You're using like, you know, this stuff for personal reasons." Like it seems like they're going out. I don't know. I don't want to say to like, you know, try and like party down or anything, but like, because they don't, which is the thing.
Yeah, because they're going to,
it
like,
was really confusing.
They're going to like this park area to clear trails is essentially what they're doing. Like that's the main reason they're going is they're going to clear some trails, and then they're going to take some rafts down the river to another part and clear some more trails or whatever. But yeah, it's like very apparent that Edgar is really against this, because even at one point mentions how, you know, they shouldn't be going to where they're going. There's another place 30 miles, another park 30 miles down the road where they should be going. And Mike's basically like, let me worry about this. Like, stay in your lane type of deal.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, I mean, like that, and that's the, when, you know, when the only things that connects that first sequence to the rest of this movie is Edgar's listening to the radio.
Yeah, that's
when
right.
Mike walks in to talk to him about getting the bus up and running, and he's, and it's like, oh, these people went missing in, you know, Mills Creek or whatever the fuck. Like,
it's not until way later that we understand why Edgar is so hesitant to stay away from there and go somewhere else. But at this point, you're kind of just like, what's his deal? You know? Yeah,
exactly. Like every scene he has an interaction with somebody, and that's kind of the reaction I had, was it's like, what the fuck is his problem?
Because he also makes lines, and he makes some lines later too about you know, fraternizing with women, you know, all this shit. So I don't know, he's just kind of a very, very bizarre character. But yeah, we learn that he's sort of there to drive them to their camp spot, and then he's going to take the rafts to a different part and get the rafts ready to where the rafts need to be, and that's like really the only thing that he's going to be there for, is what is kind of established.
Yeah, so like, and there's like this, you know, the sequence where Mike kind of goes to talk to Edgar about this, then they go to pick up the girls for this trip.
Yep.
And that's a whole weird sequence too, because it's like they go and pick up these young women, and they're like with their mom and dad or whatever, and they kept like the Rangers kept saying like weird things like, don't worry, we'll take good care of your daughters and like stuff like this, and it was just like
yeah, it was kind of like, bizarre, huh?
Yeah, it was just like kind of strange, because you're just like, what the like, I don't know, this whole movie has a vibe like right away that you're just like weird. Yep. It's just kind of odd.
So all in all we've got Dennis, Margaret, Wendy, Marco, Nathan, Boone, Edgar, Vanessa, Mike, and Melanie. Those are all the people that are Boone is someone's last name. I take that back. So the people we have are Dennis, Margaret, Wendy, Marco, Nathan, Edgar, Vanessa, Mike, and Melanie. That's the cast of characters that are going along on this venture.
Yeah. And so after they all get picked up and they're on their way, Edgar's driving them. There's this scene, and it's like one of those, you know, where this is the scene where Edgar, one, tries to like convince them to go, you know, a little further down.
Yeah, once again.
And two, when you like open this scene up, they're all like on the bus, like singing a song together. And yeah, I couldn't believe that this like group of adults were all riding on a bus singing Three Fucking Blind Mice.
It was so weird.
I was like, what the hell is happening? Like,
it's
like literally
so weird.
You could pick any number of other songs that would make more sense, but it was like Three Blind Mice. It left me like, I was just like, this, what the fuck is happening right now?
Yeah, it was really, really weird. So yeah, I don't understand that choice either, but it is what it is. I'm not going to split hairs, but this is also the part where Like I just mentioned before, that we learned that they're going to clear trails. And yeah, Edgar goes on another sort of really weird rant about how where they're going, they don't need to be there. They should be somewhere 30 miles different. And he warns them that someone's going to get hurt.
Yeah, dude. It's like, okay, Edgar. And...
And
also after they're like driving for a little bit, they seem to pass, and I couldn't tell if this was like a full-on joke or not, but they seem to pass this building that is referred to as a mental institution,
Del Norte County Mental Health,
that Edgar apparently used to live at.
One of the guys makes a joke about it being Edgar's old home,
but like there's a shot of Edgar kind of like looking. And it does, I don't know, it was just like one of those things. I was like, did he actually used to be like at that facility? I don't know. And so, you know, it just kind of paints that suspicion of Edgar again. Even
totally.
Further, like,
absolutely.
Yeah. So they get to their spot and they start unloading. And of course, you know, it's like everything again, like we've said, everything with Edgar is kind of weird. Everybody's unloading. He sort of like I can't remember what it is. Like some cans get knocked out of the tray, the bus
some
at one
cans
point.
Cans of peaches.
Yeah, and he like kind of shushes everybody away, and like, you know, it's, I don't know. Like he just everything.
Yeah, like what is he doing?
Yeah, everything's so suspicious.
And we'll see some of that in a little bit. You know. Some ties to his bizarre behavior. But yeah, it seems like before they even set up camp, they get to work. You know, they're shown in some like almost waist high water. They're clearing logs and tree parts from a body of water. There's some people that are cutting wood. And Melanie is like, hey, Mike, like, let's let them take a break. So Mike relents, lets them take a break. And while they're taking this break, a couple of them pull out joints, and one of them makes a joke to Edgar about how he doesn't have any brain cells, so he wouldn't get anything out of smoking the joint. and then Edgar, bro, what is it? Edgar's, as if Edgar wasn't already like creepy enough, what does Edgar like say to this as a way to get back at them?
I don't remember exactly what
he tells
said,
a story. He tells
like,
a...
Oh, he... he has this like wild look on his face too.
Yeah.
When this is happening, but he tells a story about how basically like another park ranger used to fuck with him and how he in the middle of the night took the dude up to like some random ass fucking place in the woods and tied him up and left him there.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck, dude?
He's just like dead, like stone face, like, you know.
Yeah, that was like the creepiest part too. He was just like, he was looked so serious about it. Like he wasn't fucking joking. He was telling you a story that he was actually impressed with.
Yeah.
And yeah, but and then like on top of that, like he's like he has like a rope line or whatever that I guess maybe some of the other guys kind of got caught up in, because he like tells the story about stringing this dude up, and you know, and then he like pulls this rope and like knocks a couple of them out from under from off their feet, and you know, they chase him off out of camp basically or whatever. It was crazy.
Wild ass fucking story, dude.
I was like, what?
I took him into the middle of the nowhere and I tied him up and I left him there. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, and he's like, they never found him. And you're like, what? Why would you share that right now, Edgar? What the fuck?
Right. So then it transitions into nighttime. And most of the group is, you know, circled around a campfire. And we're led to believe that they're telling, you know, ghost stories, scary stories. I believe that it is Mike that tells this, or not Mike, excuse me. I believe that it is, it's not Dennis that tells the story.
Is it Marco?
It's not Marco. It's not Nathan. fuck, who tells the story? Jesus. Oh, Richard. Richard Boone. That's where I got confused. Right. I apologize. So it's Richard that tells this story, and it's a pretty dark story about a 14-year-old girl who her father dies, so her uncle moves in to take care of her. At some point down the line, her uncle takes her into the woods for a hike and rapes her. This drives her crazy, and she was put into a mental institution. While she's in the mental institution, they find out that she's pregnant and gives birth to a boy. You know, she's obviously unfit to be a mother, so they take the baby away. And that fast forward 19 years later, one day out of the blue, a young kid shows up to the institution, essentially takes her away from the institution, and puts her and put her back into the woods so she could live in peace. And he finishes the story by saying that anyone that camps around here shall sneak into the camp and whisper. And then he whispers something, and it's one of those classic like campfire stories where you tell a story and at the end you say a trigger word where another person, you know, jumps out and, you know, jump scares everybody, and that's what happens.
Oh yeah.
That was a dark story.
It was a fucking, yeah, exactly. It was like, that wasn't, yeah, it was just, I don't know. It was a fucked up story.
But not only that, it fucking sends Edgar over again in a tear. Why are you telling stories like that to scare the girls? You know?
Yeah, you don't need to talk about that shit.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and exactly. And it's like, again, you're sort of like, almost like, why is he taking that so personally?
Right, right. Yeah. And once again, we'll, you know, as the movie progresses, we'll see why. But this leads Mike to go talk to Edgar again and sort of like try to maybe see what his deal is. But before he can get a word in, Edgar tells him that he's leaving now to go get the stuff ready for the next day. And he just, you know, Mike tells everybody to get their stuff off the bus. And then we see Edgar driving off in the bus. Yeah. Then where do we go to?
Well, basically, like, fucking Zorich and, who's the other guy?
Dennis, it's Zorch, who is Dennis, and then Marco and Nathan.
Yeah. So they basically, Zorch and Nathan, they basically, how do I say it? They convince Marco that they're going to go to like a nearby pot farm that's up in the hills, and
yeah,
they're gonna go steal a bunch of drugs, and you know, they'll cut him like a percentage of, you know, if he is their lookout or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
so
yeah, he'll get a third.
Yeah, and so they like go off into the fucking woods. They convince him to use like a wolf howl as like a signal.
Yeah, Dennis tells him to howl like a wolf every 45 seconds.
Every 45 seconds.
Because if you stop, then we know that, you know, somebody's coming.
But they just fucking ditch him out there. Like, yeah, that's the thing. Like, that's the shit kicker. Is like, you know, it's like they spook him into thinking that, like, you know, somebody, I think he even brings it, he's like, somebody with like an M16 could just pop out of nowhere and like, you know, like, and all this shit. And then they just fucking leave Marco out there and go back to camp.
Yeah, because as Dennis catches up with Daniel, Daniel's like, did he take the, or as he catches up with Nathan, Nathan's like, did he take the bait? Yeah, pretty douchey thing to do.
Dude, for real. Like, because it's like, it's just, it's the middle of the night, right? And so it's like, it'd be so hard to know where the fuck you are.
Mm-hmm. Like,
anyway, so, yeah, so they basically just leave him out in the woods and go back to camp.
Because, yeah, we learn that the next scene, you know, that they... And they think it's funny, you know.
Yeah, dude. The big boss man don't think it's funny. He wakes everybody up and is like, where the fuck's Marco? Well, at first, Melanie wakes him up with a cup of coffee next to his sleeping bag.
And some neck kisses. That's a good way to get woken up.
Yeah, they get necked. She's necking on him.
If I could get woken up every morning by someone handing me a cup of coffee, like if I didn't have to go make it myself, yes, please. But continue.
Yeah. It is nice to have that. So he basically starts rallying everybody else up. Mm-hmm. And that's when he realizes Marco's not there and what the fuck happened. And so he drags Nathan and Dennis, like, you know, out to go fucking find him.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, you know, where'd you guys leave him? Like, we need to go now. Because at this point, it could be very well could be a missing person situation now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they sort of end up, you know, trudging through the woods to the general location where they think, you know, he could have, like, they left him. But he's not necessarily there.
No, but they do find something that he was wearing.
Yeah, like it's like his handkerchief or whatever.
Yeah, and it's on a fucking dead animal carcass.
Oh my god, dude. It's like, fuck?
Yeah, that'd be gross. And so that leads Mark to, he tells Dennis and Nathan to go back to camp. He wants them to send Melanie to where he is, and then he wants the rest to go search the other side of the camp for Marco. So that's his plan.
Yeah, it's a solid plan, right? He's like, we'll start here and we'll work downstream. You guys start downstream and work up.
Yep.
And, you know, also smart park ranger move. He gives them some tape, tells them to mark the trail. I was like, that's good. That's a good move. But
we get some intercut shots of what's, you know, the different groups. There's like a quick scene of, you know, the others basically accosting Dennis and Nathan for being stupid, rightfully so. And then what's super weird is like Mike's, you know, looks for Marco for a little while and decides to take a nice little swim in a you know, he disrobes, and takes a nice little swim. And this leads Melanie to sort of watch him for a minute, jump scare him, and then get into the water herself. It's like, wait a minute. Aren't you supposed to be looking for this guy and you're just putting aside some time to take a swim?
That's what I'm saying, dude. It happened like so fast. I was like, this guy walked like a few paces to the north and found a fucking stream, and he's like, all right, well, I guess Marco ain't here.
Also, one thing of note before Melanie gets in the water, they have like a upside down Spider-Man type kiss.
Oh my
like
God,
way before Spider-Man.
Dude, you have no idea. Like, that was the first thing I thought about in that scene. Like, I was like, holy shit, dude, they're doing the Spider-Man kiss. And I, like, though I can almost probably like 85% certainty say this had no there's not a reference in Spider-Man to this movie, but I definitely saw that. Like, I was just like, oh my god. I remember
when that came out. I remember when that came out, doing this, like, reenacting the Spider-Man kiss with this girl I was seeing, and it was just kind of weird, you know. But it was fun. It was like, let's do the Spider-Man kiss, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it doesn't seem like it's a good lineup, you know.
No, it's very awkward. But yeah, so one thing leads to another, and next thing we know, Mike's giving it to Melanie good.
He's dicking down in the fucking in the fucking woods with Melanie. All right.
No nudity, but he's bucking down. So.
Oh yeah. They're getting buck wild up in there. But unfortunately, It doesn't seem to go too far, you know, for them, because like out of nowhere pops this, like,
you don't even really get a shot of them yet. Yeah,
you see like an arm and like a hooked blade of some sort.
Yeah,
and it just starts slicing up Mike while he's on top of Melanie. It's fucking gnarly, dude. Could you imagine, like, it would be so hard to want to bone ever again after having somebody murdered on top of you.
Yeah,
terrible.
Speaking of traumatic experiences, absolutely,
for real. But yeah, Mike gets taken out right then and there, but you don't see Melanie get killed.
No,
you see her covered in some blood and screaming.
Yep.
And then it kind of drifts away to like following up with Dennis and Nathan again. So that's like, yes, kind of like, it leaves you on this note of like, what happened to Melanie?
Yeah, 100%. Because the next thing we know, we see Nathan and Dennis, like you said, and they are walking along and they seem to notice smoke coming from a nearby cabin. So naturally, like anyone would, they go to check it out. We, you know, from the outside, you sort of notice that it's kind of like a ratty, you know, miskept place, but there are some chickens in cages. But a couple things of note, they see an old camp raft, nearby. And they also come across an old grave site, like a homemade grave site with, a headstone made out of two put together sticks. And one of them, you know, makes mention about, oh, how it's probably just like a dog or something. If it was me, that would probably be a little bit of a red flag type situation.
Yeah. 100%. Okay. I would say that I would want to investigate that cabin.
100%.
But like, yeah, I mean, it would be like so suspect, you know, walking up there.
Yep.
But
that's what Dennis does. He heads inside to investigate. He starts screaming bloody murder. So naturally Nathan runs inside to look for him. But it turns out to be a prank, because while Nathan's back is turned, Dennis pops out of like a old woman's wig and an old woman's nightgown. And they get into a little like wrestling tussle, and they back into like a nearby like a shelf or drawer, whatever, like a, what the fuck is the term for in your kitchen?
Like a pantry shelf. Yeah,
pantry shelf. Thank you. And they back into, and they knock something over, and they pick it up, and it is a large can of peaches, identical to the ones that Edgar was seen dropping from the bus earlier.
Yeah, man. Immediately, like, what the hell? And that's what, like, I think even like Nathan says. He's like, what the hell is going on here? And, you know, even further, they also find Edgar's hat.
Yeah, very
hanging
yeah.
up nearby.
Yes. Yeah, they also, you know, they also find a boombox that Nathan believes to be one that was stolen from him. There's also weird stuff in jars. Dennis steals a jar of mushrooms. But what is the thing that they find that leads them to, you know, sort of leaving the cabin for the time being?
Yeah, so they're like, you know, as you, like you're saying, like they kind of, they're looking around, but then they open this cabinet up and there's like a severed head of some sort of animal.
It's a wolf.
A wolf. Okay. And it's just like, you know, bloody, just on a shelf. There seems to be like, I don't know, like a snake or a big ass worm or whatever crawling through it.
Ugh.
And yeah, they're like, you know, like they're like, oh, he was sicker than I ever thought he was. And you know, this leads them to running out off back to camp, like you said, like, mm-hmm. because like at that point, yeah, it's just like, what the fuck, dude? You know,
yeah.
One thing for him to be stockpiling peaches in his cabin in the woods, but the whole other thing to have like weird shit, like a severed head and weird jarred appendages and stuff like around. Like, I'm sure there's like, anyway, so yeah, so they basically like go back and presumably tell everybody, you know, what they found.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Because at this point, it's, you know, they found a lot of things that are incriminating, but they're just, you know, they don't have any. In my opinion, it is almost basically solid proof, but they don't have like solid proof. So at this point, it's very strong suspicions. Some of the other group mentioned, you know, obviously Mike and Melanie, and how they're not back yet, but they know what they're doing and they wouldn't leave them up all night if something wasn't wrong. So they agree on a couple things that, you know, there's going to be a person that stays up and does watch. Going forward, we're going to be in pairs if we do anything, and the group decides to, you know, wait there for the night, and then sort of come up with a new plan in the morning. So that's what they do. They, next thing we know, we see, you know, Dennis is going to take the first shift of being on lookout, and he sort of heads the other way. And the next scene is really creepy. Just one way to put it.
Yeah, absolutely fucking creepy. Is it Margaret that this happens to? So yes. Like everybody's asleep. Like I would lose my shit if this happened to me. But everybody's asleep, and you see this like.
How would you describe the suit it was wearing?
I mean, like, it's like this person or whatever is wearing this like camouflage-esque, like deep camouflage. It's like a whole like blanket basically on its back of like grass and weeds and stuff. And it's like, it looks dark and kind of like cut, like it's almost like maybe covered in mud or something. And it like sneaks right up to where Margaret's sleeping, and like doesn't it put its hand over her mouth?
It starts caressing her.
That's what it was. Oh my god, that's even creepier, honestly. Yeah, it starts caressing her, and like just like, I mean, like kind of whispers, and like then, you know, Margaret like freaks out, like wakes up screaming. Brings Dennis, Dennis comes running back to camp, and you know, yeah, she's basically like, there, you know, like there was something here, like, you know, god dude, it would,
we see more of the creepy fucking camouflage suit and how it allows the killer to blend into its surroundings and sort of maneuver around in a really fucking creepy way. It was a good, it was a really solid choice. Absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely agree there.
God. But yeah, you know, her waking up screaming, you know, led the killer to running off. So yeah, the group consoles her. Dennis makes mention about how he hurt his wrist. So Nathaniel's wrapping a bandage around it. But then the group notices, like from the other side where Dennis just came from, they sort of see the figure of someone else approaching. And this puts them on edge again. Who does it end up being?
Who approaches? I don't remember off the top of my head.
It's Marco!
Oh my god, that's right. That's right. Which is also strange though, because like at this point in the movie, because of like, you know, you seeing sort of like the fate of Mike and Melanie, you know, well, not necessarily Melanie, but you sort of just assume that Marco has been killed off. And so for him to come walking back out of the woods, like to me, that was like a red herring moment where I was like, is he suspect? Like, why that's the fuck fair. Is he just showing up now?
That's fair.
Yeah, that's right.
Cause he walks up and how,
right.
And he just howling. Tells him, he just tells him, you know, that he's sort of like, he doesn't say that he was lost. He says that he was just sort of, he went all over. And he also pulls out some marijuana plants, you know,
Found the crop.
Yep.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's again, it was like, I'm like, yeah, when I was watching through this, it definitely was like a surprising moment for me.
Because oh, totally. Yeah, you just assumed that he was dead.
Yeah.
So, but this leads Vanessa to sort of get angry at the group for being childish. And she heads off to use the outhouse. Dennis is like, hey, you need to have someone go with you. And she's like, nah, I'm good. I'm, you know, I can take care of myself. So she goes to the outhouse, and I will say this, at least the outhouse had some toilet paper.
I was surprised by that. That perhaps one of the most surprising things in this movie.
Totally. Totally. And it even had like a toilet seat. Like it seemed like a well put together, you know, hole in the ground. So yeah, she goes in, she puts some toilet paper around the rim of the toilet seat. She sits down, shuts the door to do her business. But she's not, let's just say she's not able to do her business in peace.
Well, cause like that, she kind of encounters that bloody wolf's head from earlier.
That was Mike's head.
What am I thinking of then? Oh my God. Well, that's even worse. So, okay. So she encounters Mike's head, obviously freaks out.
And it fucking just falls on her.
Dude, could you imagine that? Like, you're like sitting down to take a deuce or something, and somebody you know, severed head, just comes tumbling into your fucking, like...
Jesus Christ.
Yaybosa.
Yeah. So she screams like a banshee. You know, the group runs up, and... one of them like flashes their lighted, and you can also see a part of Mike's like upper torso in there as well. So at this point, you know, they had just thought that Mike and Melanie were missing, and so they're sort of realized like the gravity to this situation. You know, it's confirmed that Mike is dead. They have no idea where Melanie is. So. You know, they head back to the campfire. Dennis starts sharpening his knife, and the group sort of has different suggestions about what they should do. You know, they obviously talk about finding Melody. Marco is the one that's like, you know, we should just get the hell out of here as soon as we can.
Yeah, Dennis is all like, let's go back to that house in the morning, and, you know, hopefully we'll find Edgar there.
Yeah. And Nathan's like, you know, let's stay for the night. We'll head for the river in the morning. So they all have different ideas of what they want to do. But like you said, Dennis is like, I want to search the cabin again. And he also says, if we want to survive this thing, we got to think like the forest. And so the next scene where it's morning time again, we sort of notice that certain members of the group have face paint on. Some of the girls have headsets on that are made out of leaves. So they're also trying to maybe blend into their surroundings a little bit better.
Yeah, exactly. Got to think like the forest.
It's not bad advice, you know.
No, it's just a weird phrase. But yeah, so they do. And like you said, they're kind of like this time, you know, you almost get the sense that like they're a little more prepared, right?
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, they kind of encroach on that cabin.
Mm-hmm.
And
get your ass out here, man. We're coming to get you.
We're coming to get you. But what, like, that's the thing, though. So, you know, the cabin was weird the first time around, but what the fuck did they find in the cabin this time?
Yeah, it's like... So, like I said, in the first scene, there's all these weird jars, but this time they Nathan goes in first, and he notices some like burnt, rotting flesh that's on the table.
Right, like,
and he's even
the fuck?
Even to the point where he puts his hand over his nose. That's one of those smells that I'm really thankful that I haven't smelled in my life yet, but I hope I never have to smell either A, rotting flesh, or B, burning flesh. But while he's in there, we get this cool shot where the camera pans down to beneath the floorboards, And we see that this, you know, killer, the this camouflage costumed hooked blade wielding killer is below the floorboards, keeping Melanie hostage with her hand around her mouth. Marco enters the cabin as well, and the rest of the group sort of, most of the group sort of piles in slowly behind him. And this is where they notice a fucking human hand in a glass jar. And this sort of leads them to, you know, get the fuck out of there. So they grab that nearby raft and they decide that, you know, rather than us deal with this, we're going to raft out of here. We're going to call the cops and have them come deal with it. So that's their plan.
Which is a pretty sound plan, if you ask me at this point. I mean, clearly there's some fuckery going on around this place. Like, but yeah, so yeah, they start hauling that, you know, raft down to the water. You see like a shot of Melanie and the killer kind of having gone back up to the main room in the cabin. Also at this point, and yeah, but like the main crew, they kind of gear up as best they can and they start trying to head down the water.
Yeah, they like only, you know, they go back to their bags. They seem to only grab the necessities that they need from their bags. We also get another shot of the killer putting like a hat on Melanie's head. It was really bizarre. So yeah, they get into the raft and they start paddling away. And the next shot is really cool. Okay, so it seems like there's some, you know, they've made some headway. They're further down the river. So the camera sort of pans in from above. And then it focuses on them. And they pass by this giant, there's like a rock wall that they pass by. And you notice something on the rock wall. And as they get past it, whatever it was stands up, and you realize that it was the fucking killer in their camouflage gear, resting silently, stiff as a board, on that fucking rock face. It was such a creepy shot,
dude. It was truly like chilling. We'll say, like,
chilling is a really good word for it,
because it was that moment of like you literally just passed right by this.
Yes.
And it's didn't just even know it. It's just there watching you.
Like, yeah. Ugh. Fucking disturbing.
Ugh.
Further then, proving that this, you know, whatever this camouflage suit they're wearing, once again, you know, allows them to perfectly blend into their surroundings, giving it this air of like, it could be anywhere, you know, it knows these surroundings better than us, you know, just it really gives them the upper hand. Yeah. So.
Exactly. And then, you know, sort of off the cuff there, you see them kind of continuing going down the river, and then just out of nowhere, Melanie's body just comes flying down, dumps right onto the raft, and it's like, you know, she's bloodied and there's like a rope tied around her neck and stuff, and she's fucking dead.
Yeah.
And it just like lands like I said, like right in the middle of the raft. You know, there's this immediate reaction of like some of them are like looking up to see if they can, like, where the fuck did that come from? And they don't see anything. And I mean, fuck, dude, that
it's just like trauma after trauma after trauma, like,
dude, for real. This time they take a moment and they bury Melanie's body.
Yep. Yeah.
You know,
sort of by the, yeah, they dig a makeshift grave by the river. Yeah. You know, seems like the most respectful thing they could have done in that situation. So,
yeah. Well, and then they try to continue along their way and they run into like kind of a log jam where they can't really, you know, too
go
many
any farther.
Logs. Yeah. So they have to like, spend some time climbing over this big ass log and like hauling the raft over and shit. And then, you know, they eventually come to a point where they pull off from the water and they can spot the bus on the bridge, like this bridge roadway, like in a little bit ahead of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
which seems like it'd be a saving grace, you know, like being like, oh my God, there it is. But it seems like most of the Rangers, at least, are pretty aware that the bus is not in good condition. So it's kind of like this, like, okay, you know, it could be a trap. It could not be running. You know, we've got to go check it out at least. And
one of them asks a good question too about how could he do all this. You know, in referring to Edgar. But yeah, it's Dennis, I think, the one that says it out loud. You know, this could be a trap. Let's wait until dark. So that's what they do.
Yeah.
You know, next thing we know, it's dark, and they're going to investigate the bus.
There's like this kind of slow scene where, like, you know, like you said, they're investigating the bus and they're kind of going, you know, bench by bench, you know, Edgar, come out. We know you're here, you know?
Yep.
But this scene in particular kind of reminds me, and I get that this movie's like placed out in the woods and stuff, but it is one of those movies where production wise, the lighting is not great in a significant chunk of this movie, and so you really don't like see a ton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you can kind of make out the general forms and shapes of things, but yeah,
good point.
But yeah, so eventually they discover that it's, you know, Edgar's not there, so they all pile into the bus, which could be a good thing, could be a bad thing. Like, I was like thinking about that the entire time during this scene, where I was sort of like, would I want to like try and shut the door and camp in the bus that night, you know, or would I like feel like it'd be, you know, or would it be a trap, you know?
It'd be a 50-50 situation, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they also obviously try to see if they can get it running, but it looks like they look under the hood, it looks like it's been compromised to some extent. And like you said, you know, Wendy's the one that's like, hey, I don't really feel like I don't want to stay on the bus. But the rest of the group sort of, you know, sways her into staying. They mentioned that they'll stay until sunrise, that there's some food in the cooler. You know, it's probably our best bet right now.
Some of the food they pull out of the cooler includes marshmallows and chocolate.
S'mores, baby. They can make some s'mores. But yeah,
I thought that was just so funny. But yeah, they basically decide to stay there, right? Like they light up a couple J's and hang out and try and.
I'm gonna say this. Obviously, I'm sober now, so I wouldn't be smoking anyway. But if I was in a fucking situation like this, the last thing I would do is either smoke or drink. Or do something that's going to inebriate me or take me out of my senses. Like,
yeah, dude, I kept thinking that too. I was like, especially because you also see fucking Dennis eating some of those mushrooms that he took from the fucking cabin. And I was like, why the fuck would any of these people want to be out of their fucking minds right now? When they're like being stalked and killed in the woods.
Yeah, I would want to be on my highest alert.
Yeah, exactly. I want to be alert and fucking present right now. Okay.
Yeah.
Ay-yi-yi.
And while they're smoking this joint, we get a shot back at the cabin, and we see Edgar inside. You know, he's got his normal clothes on. You know, the clothes that he was wearing before. You know, it's just it does give us that proof that he's, you know, in some extent, that is his cabin.
Yeah,
he's involved to some extent.
Exactly,
you know?
He is connected to the situation in some way.
Yep. But then we go back to the bus, and everyone's sleeping. I know it'd be hard. But in a situation like this, I'd probably, you know, you'd obviously have to sleep at some point, but you would think it would be smart to have like at least one person awake, you know, type of deal.
Yeah.
But everyone's fucking sleeping.
Ay, ay, ay. Nobody's on watch. And guess what fucking happens, right? Like they start, you know, there's like some thumping and some noises happening. And then out of nowhere, the camouflaged killer busts through one of the windows. Well, doesn't like physically bust through, but like breaks one of the windows down
with an axe. Yeah,
yeah, and then starts like trying to jab at like some of the rangers and the ladies, and you know, basically they all like in this mad scramble and panic squeeze out of the back side of the bus and like bolt back off into the woods. But
God, dude. Because the killer does end up, you know, making its way through the front windshield.
Yeah.
And in this really tense scene, it's like most of them make their way out. Like you said, because it's so dark, it was hard to see who the last person was that makes their way out. But they, like, within an inch of their lives, make their way out, where they're, like, struggling to get it open. And, you know, probably, like, mere seconds before the costume killer would have been there, like, make their way out as well. Yeah. So this leads them, they're obviously in fight or flight mode, literally. So they run off, and at some point, you know, they're running through down a hill, and Wendy ends up getting separated from the group at one point. She's calling out for Dennis and the others. The group realizes that she's missing, and they're calling out for her as well. But Wendy, you know, it's one of those situations where it's like, okay, you've seen a horror movie before, you know something bad's about to happen, right?
Yeah.
Something bad does happen, because the killer appears, and with that really cool hooked blade again, you know, slashes Wendy across the, it's almost like across the side of her neck.
Yeah.
But she's able to scream, and when the group comes across her, she's still alive, but wounded, and the killer's not there anymore.
Yeah, dude. And like pretty quickly, you know, they try to, the rest of the group tries to like stop the bleeding. You know, they send somebody off to go get a first aid kit.
Yeah, Dennis and Marco go back to the bus.
That's right, it's the bus.
To grab a first aid kit and some supplies so they can stitch up the wound on her neck.
Yeah, exactly. They need something to sew her up.
So they do.
You know, yeah, exactly. They do, and then they come back and like there's a, you know, like this whole scene of, you know, them like kind of, you know, stitching up her neck. And at this point, like, they're trying to really figure out what the fuck their options are. Dennis is, like, starting to lose his fucking marbles. He's over here like, it's our job to kill him, and, like, stuff like that, you know? He's, like, he's just hell-bent on, like, we need to, like, take this person the fuck out. Like,
it's fair.
I mean, yeah, at this point, if the killer is unrelenting, you gotta start playing some sort of offense. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I feel like, but
because he talks about how they're going to trap the killer somewhere nice and close are his words. And this movie kind of goes along quickly, you know what I mean? Because it's the next morning now, and they have sort of camouflaged themselves even more. It's like,
yeah, that was the kind of funny thing. Like, I thought, like, I was like, so the killer is like hella camouflaged. But yeah. I think it's funny how like they have this like incremental change themselves.
Totally.
You know what I mean? And so now, like you said, they are like more camouflaged than they've been this entire movie.
Yep. They got like, some of them have, looks like most of them have on like some sort of like black jacket. I think Nathan's wearing like a black garbage bag, but most of them have, you know, face paint on to a certain extent. They could definitely blend into their surroundings better than they could previously. They end up coming across a downed redwood tree, and we learn that they're going to set up some type of trap. Dennis, yeah,
I thought that was kind of cool. I was like, you know, like they show up to this, the spot, and they like, it's decided that like this is the perfect spot, you know.
Yeah.
This is where we'll make our fucking stand.
We're gonna kill him. We're gonna kill him right here. It's where it's gonna happen.
Yeah, dude.
And you also mentioned something good. in this speech, he talks about how the killer is quiet and is waiting. And it's a good point, you know. And this is where they realize that he's taken the said mushrooms. You know, he's sort of acting loopy. Also, and we don't.
Sorry, we forgot to mention this. It happened at some point earlier in the movie, but Dennis has created this like makeshift, armor for his like forearm.
Oh yeah,
it's like somehow he's like strapped like a piece of wood or something to his forearm, and like you just see it a couple of times in this shot. Like it really doesn't play much into anything, but it's like a piece of his wardrobe, which I thought was just kind of funny. It's like, but yeah, so you know he's like you said, he's kind of he's starting to like lose it a bit. He's you know they're like noticing that he's just like saying weirder and weirder shit. He even like mentions, you know, the war, like, you know, he's like, yeah, the VC, they knew how to do like do what the killer's doing to us, like shit like that. And you're just like, oh yeah, yeah.
But yeah,
we're a veteran with some trauma. Get it?
Right, maybe. And so we sort of see a little bit of them like whittling wood into sharp ends, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then probably one of the most impressive parts about this whole entire movie is that Dennis, using a rope, scales a nearby massive fucking tree, and someone, I don't know who it was, whatever stuntman, whatever professional, somebody actually did this in, you know, filming this movie, like literally using that rope method. And I don't know how anyone ever climbs a tree like that. It's mind blowing.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of those things about this movie that I remember, reading about was that was actually an actual like logger or crew, like some sort of crew member of like, you know, a position like that. And that's, I mean, I guess I never realized that that's how they fucking used to climb trees.
Yeah. Crazy.
Like, yeah, because like that, I mean, just those, like, yeah, like you said, there's a like big ass rope and he's basically just like, you know, moving it inches at a time by like slinging one side, you know, really hard to like create some slack on the other, moving that side up a little bit, then going back and forth. I was just that dude. It was the most mind-blowing thing out of this whole movie, honestly, to me. I was like, what the fuck, dude?
The arm and core strength, Jesus Christ. Yeah, because he sort of climbs the tree to, you know, set the rest of the trap in motion. There seems to be, you know, a bunch of ropes and strings involved. So you're sort of like, whatever this trap is, it's elaborate, you know. Yeah. But yeah, once again, I was just mind blown. Like, I can't believe that's how they used to climb trees to, you know, whatever they were doing, if they were cutting them down. Crazy, crazy.
Yeah, I know. I was blown away by that. But yeah, so basically, like we've been saying, they create this trap. They set up some sort of trap for Edgar. That's what you're led to believe.
Yeah, because I forgot to mention too that you see some of the group, you know, hiding in the surroundings while he's climbing this tree.
Yeah. And so once everything's set, now it's time to lay the bait, right?
Yep.
And is it?
It's Marco.
Yeah, Marco. Marco, he's no longer howling, but he's walking around, yelling like, you know, for Edgar, like, Edgar, where are you?
Yeah.
You know, like trying to bait him to coming in to get him, and. Let's just say it works because Edgar like pops up behind him at one point, just out of nowhere, and like slings a rope around Marco's like neck and starts trying to strangle him, and they like tumble down like the side of this log.
Yeah,
that's when like boom, you know, couple like some other members of the fucking the crew like pop up out of nowhere with, you know, like, and they do like they have like full on like leaves and like other stuff like strapped to their back, so they were just like crouched and waiting, you know. And they just basically get up and just start jumping Edgar, like they were like,
yeah,
he's like on the ground, they're like kicking the fuck out of him, like they're pounding him, dude. But then you see you know, Dennis kind of like climb up on top of this, like the butt end of this like fallen tree. And he's like, there's this epic, like creepy Dude, shot.
It's amazing.
Oh man. And he's like standing on this, and from within the tree, you see the camouflaged killer start creeping out in its camouflage and like climbing up the side until it's right behind Dennis, and then slices him with the fucking with that like blade. And oh my, it's just such a creepy
shot. It was incredible.
Because you did not see the character until it just pops out.
Yeah, and, dude. It just emerges from the bottom of the bottom root of this knocked over tree. It was great. It was awesome. Great. Yeah. Slices his fucking ankle. He falls, lands in an, essentially falls to his death. You know, he falls, he lands in a very, very awkward position. So Dennis is dead. You know, we don't, one thing I will say about this movie is I thought there was going to be more of a body count.
Yeah,
it's not a negative on the movie, but it was, at this point, you know, it seemed like everyone was going to survive. So it was kind of a surprise when, you know, Dennis, who was sort of in charge, you could say, you know, meets his demise. But then we get the fucking reveal, because the killer, after, you know, Dennis falls, they stand up and they start wailing.
Oh my God, the sounds.
Get a shot of their fucking face. And then Edgar, Mom, you're like, what the fuck? Turns out that story they told about, you know, this guy putting his mom, like, you just see this feral old woman and all these pieces from earlier click together.
Dude, it's wild. It's absolutely wild. Like, yeah. And like, to be honest, like, yeah, like the sounds of that person screaming were fucking haunting. And yeah, like Edgar being like, mom. And then, you know, oh, that shot, dude. I mean, but like, so like, you know, like you said, killer's like full on like there and starts running down the tree towards the you know, the ranger, the other, you know, rangers and whatnot, and like just gross head to toe, like, you know, shots of the feet were like gnarly looking. But then it runs and it trips on a trip line and springs the trap that they set for it. And oh my God, dude, like, this shot was so fucking cool. Like, they've created this giant log that has all these spiked pieces of wood coming off of it that comes swinging down, and it impales the Edgar's mom like straight on it. And there's a shot where it like follows like the trajectory of the log, and it's just, oh my God, dude, it's so cool. And like the way it hits, like the way the body just is like impaled on the back end of it, like it looked so fucking cool, honestly.
It was awesome. Yeah, it was a good, it was great. And what's cool too is that the movie just ends in silence, you know. You have this you have this body hanging there. It goes to one more shot of Dennis's dead awkward, you know, body. It goes to a shot of Edgar, who's still alive, and the group around him, and then one more shot of his dead mom, feral mom, impaled on the fucking spiked log trap. Camera pans up, cue credits. Dude, that, the trap was great, you know. My god,
dude, absolutely. Like that,
I love shit like that in movies.
Yeah, like that was there were like a few key moments that I thought were really well done in this movie, but that one was like such a fucking surprise delight, and like just so like pulled off so well. Like,
yeah.
Oof. Yeah. It was,
there were some awesome shots in this movie. That, you know, the killer coming out of the bottom of the tree. Mm-hmm. It was just a really fun, quick, it was a really fun, entertaining movie. You know, not a high body count, but there's some really good shit in there. And I think that there didn't need to be a high body count, because the killer, like, it just created this sense, like you said earlier, where this killer could be anywhere at once, you know, and is just stalking and toying with them and creating this, like, never-ending sense of dread, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's like, you don't know how to escape because you don't know where you can escape. Like, yeah, overall, I mean, like, kind of a surprise of a movie. Like you said, a little bit of a lower body count than I thought, but it's not it's not necessarily the worst sin in a horror movie.
No.
Yeah, but so, you know.
There's some good stuff. There's some good stuff, man. There's, you know, the killer reveal is good. Unexpected. It's not the worst backwoods, you know. I would say it was more creative than a lot of them are, you know. It wasn't just put these teens in this wood situation and a slasher comes along and kills them one by one. Like, there's some creativity.
I did like the build up and then, like, reveal of the killer's origin. Like,
totally.
You know, like, because, like you said, like, that fucked up story at the beginning, near the beginning, you're just sort of like, oh, it's a really, like, off, like, ghost story to tell. But then when you find out at the end of the movie that it was a fucking real story, you're just like, oh, it just adds this extra layer, man.
But not only that, but it also brings it back to the part where Edgar tried warning them, like, we should go somewhere else. Like, he knew full and well if these people go there, like, it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
And so, although, you know, he took part in it, he tried
to save them. They saved their lives, you know.
He tried to get them to avoid going there. And if they would have just listened to Edgar instead of, you know, oh, you crazy kook, you know.
Yeah, you goddamn geek.
No, it was a solid movie.
Yeah. So, you know, how would you rate this movie?
I would say I'd probably give it like a 7. I'd probably give it like a 6.8. Between a 6.8 and a 7.2, out of 10. What about you?
I'll give it a solid 6. I'll give it a solid 6 wolf head in the cabinet out of 10. Because, you know, like I said, there's like a few really pivotal things in this movie that, like, get under my skin, you know, that, like, really, like, got me. But at times, like, there was some things about it where I was sort of like, you know, like, production wise I was kind of like, oh, I wish this would have been better.
Good point.
But 6 out of 10 for sure, because it still is like a still is like far from being a trash movie. It was like kind of like you sort of said it earlier, like kind of like a different backwoods killer movie in some ways, and so that I thought was really kind of cool.
Yeah, and it is quick, you know what I mean? Like, it's a quick watch. Like, this is probably one of our shortest, you know, time spent reviewing a movie, because it just kind of have a pretty quick pace to it. There's worse ways you can spend an hour and 20 minutes, so.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely is a pretty, like, pretty quick bang, like, you know, kind of bangs out the story. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely worth watching. The Final Terror, you know, I mean, in the way you presented it, like, back, you know, oh, this is a back, like, kind of like this backwoods killer movie, like, boom. Like, if you're at all interested in that kind of genre of horror, just fucking pop it on.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a solid one, dude. So random thing that I was looking at just now is that when they were scouting places to potentially shoot this movie, which I think they ended up eventually shooting it in, like, I think it was Southern Oregon. Like,
yeah, it was mainly in the redwood forests in California, and then in Oregon, yeah.
Yeah, but apparently they at least tried to scout like around the Mount St. Helens area.
That'd have been cool,
which I thought was interesting, and perhaps a little bit of backstory to that whole weird like random three blind mice sing along was that this one of the working titles, I guess, for this movie was Three Blind Mice as well.
Okay. So,
which I don't know why. I don't know why, but
yeah, you know. I don't either.
And a random story that apparently it's like on the Wikipedia page, but apparently they had some like difficulty shooting at times because of things like weather conditions, but also in particular, there's a story about how some of the locals gave the cast marijuana brownies. Which resulted in a couple of them getting into a car crash because one of them crashed a car into a redwood tree.
What?
Yeah. And so some of them got hospitalized for a second. Yeah, it's like really random shit around this movie. That's kind of one of the things that's like sort of interesting to me about this movie is just that there's a hodgepodge of weird stuff just around this movie. Like, whether, you know, the fact that it was shelved for a couple of years until some of the actors blew up to weird stories like that where it's, you know, what the fuck? But yeah, I mean, overall, fun movie. Definitely worth checking out.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's a bad way to spend your time.
Right.
Neither is listening to these Whack Arnold's Brothers podcasts. So.
Yeah, no, we've got some fun stuff in the pipeline coming up, so
I think we can just claim it. So, you know, we're working our way up to episode 90. If you've been listening along long enough, which is about for how long now?
Over 2 years now.
Boom.
Just barely over 2 years now.
Once we hit episode 90, we're gonna be doing we're going to reflect back on the movies that we have covered, and you'll get our official rankings of all the movies that we have talked about so far on this podcast, which is something I'm really looking forward to because there's definitely some highs and some lows. And I'll say right now, I would say probably most of the movies that are on the low end are probably movies that I've picked because I've had some real duds.
I don't know. We'll see.
We'll find out, dude.
It'll be fun.
But you know, so make sure you keep following along because you know that'll be a fun benchmark to hit. And then most certainly that we have a special surprise for episode 100 also. But we will leave that off the table for today.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I say, corn dogs, hot dogs, whatever kind of dog you are, if you're listening along, we appreciate you. This is always a fun way to sort of, you know, check out those new horror movies if you haven't. That's like, it's something we get a benefit out of. I hope people like kind of follow along in that way. Maybe they find something they want to watch as well. So,
yeah.
Any final horror thoughts?
Not that I can think of right now. Just, you know, go watch horror.
Dude, there it is. Yep. Well, we'll see you on the next one.
Toodles.